is a recording of Cliff Roach from Oceanside, California, taped at the 3rd Annual Tulare County Central Office Speaker Meeting Barn Dance held in Visalia, California on Saturday, April 11, 1992. In observance with the 11th tradition stating anonymity at the public level, please keep this tape within the fellowship and observe the anonymity of all AA speakers. Picture in your mind, if you will, at the beginning of the tape, Cliff nattily dressed in his nicest suit and a nice red tie, with his best Jed Clampett style hat on, riding a stick pony out to the tune of Bonanza.
Any more time, I want to introduce our speaker from Oceanside. It's Cliff R. Can we hear it for Cliff?
I'm Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic. And an idiot. And not one other person in the world could talk me into that. Well, maybe my sponsor, but... That goof grass, he should be put away somewhere. He has no business hanging around with real people. Oh, what a goof. I got one of those signs that says, Cliff is coming. I'm going to show it to my Al-Anon when I get home. Oh, sugar. What? I just thought of a good line there, but I won't use it. Visalia, gateway to Farmersville. I got a goddamn sign. That's what it says. The flag on each side, huh? They all should be locked up, the whole bunch of them, huh? God, what a funny farm, huh? But I am just delighted to be here. What a spot, huh? Look at this. Purple Mountains Majesty, huh? You know, if I'd have known all this was going to happen to me, I'd have enjoyed that drinking more. Yeah. It's just a life. And were you like I was when I came in? You know, I've been drinking since I was 15 years old, and I had never had a good time in my life where I wasn't drinking. From the age of 15 on, now. You know, maybe it was like 3 beers at a football game, but I never had fun. Everybody here has heard me so many times, you're all going to move your damn lips with me. But I've never had fun when I didn't have booze involved. And I had been a loser in and out for several years, and I came here surrendered. And I knew I was going to stay sober one day at a time, just as long as I lived. I knew that. I was through with booze, but I knew I was never going to have a good time again as long as I lived. God, and did I undershoot the mark, huh? I've had more fun just this afternoon. With the goddamn signs. I had more fun this afternoon than the last 5 years I drank. I don't know about you, but I thought I was having a good time, you know. I was one of your original party boys. I just have a few belts, huh? Remember that? Gonna have a couple, that was it. Just have a couple here. And then the moon would be full and the wind was right, and I would say, let's go have fun! And the only people in the world can say it that way as us, huh? It comes right from your belly that rolls out. You know what I mean. You say that in AA, and all her eyes glaze over. You know. Yeah. A little slobber at the corner of the mouth. Huh? You know what I'm talking about. Getting that crap beat out of you and going to jail. Remember that? Oh, I could find your car at the bottom of a ravine in the morning, huh? With you in it. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I almost died of it. If I'd have had one more good time, you'd have another speaker tonight, I'll guarantee you, you know. But I could you resist? I could not resist it. I was like that dog Buck in the Call of the Wild. I just had one of those days. Remember those days? You were just sick all day. Just, oh, go to work anyway. Sick. And the boss knew you were sick, and so he'd just get on you. And you just laughed all day. Just grit your teeth and just live through the day. Don't eat. Drink about 400 cups of coffee. Just stay pissed off all day. You know, when you owed $1 million, and they all wanted it, you didn't have a brass razoo to pay with, you know. And you were married to her. She's just in the last desperate throes of terminal pre-Al-Anonism. And a sense of humor had just been gone for years and years and years. And yet all these long-haired dope fiend children, you know, you know, and heard a guy say a couple of weeks ago that there's no gravity, the earth sucks. You know, and just then, just at that moment, grass had come by and say, come on, Cliff, let's go have some fun. And off I'd go again, huh? I know the last 5,999 times I got in trouble. But tonight, it's going to be fun. Huh? Hey, don't say that in an Al-Anon meeting. They don't like that. You know? They don't care for fun. They have fun.
Yes, 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 lots of fun last night, didn't we, Cliff?
Matter of fact, you say fun around them, they go. Remember that?
Don't you think you had a few too many?
I so I say, nah, you had a few too few. That's your goddamn problem, lady. And you know, so when I got here, I never thought there would be, you know, because that's the way I drank. I just love to drink. I love the taste of booze. Did you ever hear these weenies get up to the podium and say,
I never cared for the taste of alcohol.
Would you care for the taste of booze, huh? Because I love the taste of booze. I like it all. I vanilla extract. I'm not real crazy. Real crazy, but it has a bouquet, you gotta admit that. You like sour mash bourbon whiskey the best? Good. And my daddy showed me how to drink sour mash bourbon when I was 17. And you drink about a triple shot. And a little water to rinse your mouth. And you know, I.W. Harper, Yellowstone was our favorite. Boom! You just let it burn its way. Oh, I love that burning, didn't you? And you take the water, rinse your mouth. And you swallow the water. Then you breathe out through your nose. A couple of weeks ago at home, I was talking about that, and out in the audience, I heard this. I said, there's one! There's one! This just came out of this guy. Could have lost him if he's new, you know. And then it, you know, it goes out there to the ends of the fingers and the tips of the toes, and just makes the world better, huh? after about eight of those, at about 40 minutes, as I always remember, after about 40 minutes, everything was okay. Just for about 8 minutes, everything was just... After that, a lot of times, but for 8 minutes, everything was okay, and I'd get dressed up good. You know, I was thinking, this one sport coat I wear a lot, I wear it like 5 and 6 times now, and take it to the cleaners. I only wore clothes once, didn't you? When you went out really to have a good time, the lapel would be gone, somebody threw up on it, and my blood all over it, and it feels funny to wear a coat 3 or 4 or 5 times, you know, even after all these years. But my drinking led me, you know, the last one I remember, I was lying in the front seat of my car. It was a 58 Chevy. It was my surfing car. My surfing wagon, I remember it. You should have seen that guy. That car, it should be in the archives somewhere, you know. Alcoholic's car. There wasn't one inch of that car that wasn't dented. One time I got on the roof and did the Mexican hat dance. You know, I remember that we got the back. I'll never forget that. I was trying to get out of this bar one night, and I'd back up, and I'd pull forward. And this one, on and on and on. All of a sudden, there's this fat guy's face right in the window. He said, "There's a telephone pole there." "Thank you very much." You know, and the one headlight went on the left one. Just mad. And one time I was drunk, I painted it with house paint. I'd come up to a stop sign and people just go, "Oh, go ahead." Nobody screwed with that car. Oh, I'll tell you. And that morning I had moved out of my less than happy home. I'd been threatening to move out of that crazy house anyway. It was a zoo. Of course, I was the head nut. I didn't realize that at the time, but this pre-Al-Anon and I had 5 children, all of them rotten kids. Well, we couldn't help it. We had alcoholism and Catholicism at the same time. And we had a kid every 9 months and 20 minutes, it seemed like to me. She and I talked to her together a little while back, and she talked on Sunday morning. She said, "He lied. He never lasted 20 minutes. She's a rotten person. Just seemed like every time I come out of a blackout, who the hell is that?" And they had grown through the years, and the older they got, the weirder they got. And the longer I drank, the weirder I got, and the longer I drank, the weirder she got. And boy, it was a zoo, I'm telling you. We had 3 kids in high school at the time, huh? We're talking about the late 60s now, folks. Now, oh, they were beauties, huh? I see a few around tonight. I met a guy named David tonight, looked just like mine. Had those faraway eyes, like Mars, far away. And he was a beauty, the oldest guy. He had hair down to his butt, you know. His headband was way too tight. He's working his way through high school as a hashish salesman. Call his mother, "Man. Hey, man, what's for dinner?" And he loved LSD. I saw some of those tonight, too. Boy, he took it like popcorn. He loved it. He just loved LSD. But they see things. Many things. And he saw his peripheral life. Well, he'd scare the hell out of me, see. I'd be right in the middle of a sentence. He'd say, "What was that?" And I'd say, "I don't know. What? Where was it?" Because I wasn't that good of shape myself, you know. And my drunken old mother-in-law had been living with us for 4 or 5 years. I'd invited her. I love that old bag. And when I'd say, what was it? And she'd say, I'll explain it. She'd lean there on her walker, you know. She had broken her hip. Nobody knew how. She didn't know how either, you know. She just showed up one morning with a broken hip. And, oh, it was a nut house. You couldn't believe that place. Jack Parr said one time, it's like they tipped the world and everything loose rolled to Southern California. And it's kind of true, isn't it? I was in Nebraska a while back. A few of them hung on the bushes there, I'll tell you for sure. A lot of them hung on the bushes there. Oh. And looks like Nebraska right here, as a matter of fact. And my two daughters, they were in high school, the two oldest daughters, and they had these boyfriends that looked exactly like my son. Put the three of them on a couch together. You should have watched that. And it was a terrible place. It was not only insanity, but there's so much anger in the place. It was just, everybody was angry. I was furious all the time. I was born angry. That's the way I've lived my whole life. I lived on the edge of insanity my whole life. I don't know about you. And that, you know, she, of course, pre-Al-Anon, she was just absolutely nuts. And then all these weird children, and everybody hated everybody else. It was one of those deals where they hated me most. I was the head hate. But they hated her because she wouldn't do anything about me, and they didn't like each other all that much either. Oh, it's a fun place to live. You should have been there. Every dope fiend kid that ran away would come to my house. They all looked alike to me. I didn't know they were. We had a bunch of other long-haired weirdos around, and of course my friends were. I had some interesting friends too. One guy would read poetry all night. He had discovered those little white pills, you know, with the crosses on. And then the grandma would go around the block and bring these old guys home. And man, I'll tell you, it was a zoo. And I've said for years, you know, if I could just unload that witch and those dope fiend children, that I could drink like a gentleman again. And I was always threatening to move out. That's one of the great... Any of you guys do that when the heat was on? You know, you say, well, maybe I just better move out. You know? And then she'd always say, well, we can talk it over. You know, and work it out okay that way. But, see, the night before, I'm telling you about it, well, this, that night I said, maybe I ought to move out. And everybody said, yeah, go for it, kid! And so they call my bluff, and... you know, we're alcoholics. If we say we're going to do, we do it. So during the night, I loaded up this station wagon team with my surfboard, and I ripped off one of the TV sets, and I remember I hung all my clothes on a shovel across the back window. Pretty clever, huh? The only thing was, it was winter, and I couldn't roll the windows up. I damn near froze to death. And all the other stuff in the back of this, and I ended up in between Carlsbad and Oceanside there. There's a little... part of the old 101 dips down there, and the Army Navy Academy sits at the top of the next hill, and there's a dirt road runs along by this lagoon, and there were some trees back over there, and I'd pull back under those trees in the early morning, and I was lying in the front seat of that car, and I'd been saying for years, if I could just unload that woman and those dope fiend weirdo children, I'd be okay. And I had unloaded them. And I was not okay. As a matter of fact, I'm lying in the front seat of that car, I'm crying. I don't mean I have tears in my eyes. I mean I'm, you know, that kind of crying. You know. All the ducks and cormorants came down that end of the lagoon, you know. They were all hot. They thought it was some kind of a mating call or something, I guess. I don't. And on the radio that day, they were playing, you know, I was there almost all day, lying there sobbing. You know. And on the radio, about 20 times, had that little jingle that was popular at the time. It went, you got a lot to live, and Pepsi's got a lot to give. And every time they get to that line about, you got a lot to live, I just, all the ducks come up down the way. You know, I had nothing to live for. My life was over. And that little jingle, you know how they come and go? The jingle, you hear it for like a month and it's gone, but That little jingle lasted like 5 years into my sobriety. And I just grew to love it. You know, I just looked forward to it. I'd sit in front of the TV, you know, drinking my Pepsi. You know, I don't even like the crap, but I figure I owe them. And, you know, they come up and said, "You got a lot to live." I say, "Right on, baby." You know, and then after about 5 years, they changed it, which I was a little chagrined about that. And they came out with this one, and they said, "Feeling free, drinking Pepsi." I thought, my God, they're staying with the motif here. You know, because isn't that what Alcoholics Anonymous, isn't that what it is? We, you know, alternatives. I never knew I could live without drinking. I knew in my heart that maybe other people could stop drinking, but I knew that I could not live without booze. I could not live without that 8 minutes. Because the world's just too much for me. I can't live sober. I got to be sedated for a few minutes a day anyway, because I can't live in the world as it is. And I knew that. And I found after that I have an alternative way to live. And I don't have to drink ever again, one day at a time. But, you know, this whole program is all about changing ideas. It's all about altering alternatives of all kinds. And I've come to, you know, one moment of truth after another as the years have gone by. You know, I can live without that. And I can live without doing that. You know, I can give up, you know, and I can turn around and do this. The one that I remember the most tonight is just, you know, I just retired last June. I was a school teacher for many years. But in the 70s, you know, I was reading, the mid-70s, I was reading a bunch of articles about teacher burnout. So I got it, you know. You know, if I read about leprosy, things fall off too, you know. But, you know, I teaching stopped being fun to me. And they started sending me these rotten classes, just the worst kids, the worst high school students the world has ever known, and it got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And I just hated to go to work. And one day, I just was looking at this bunch of kids in front of me, and I thought, I'm going to kill somebody. And I went in this little room next door, what I had, and I called, "Talk yourselves for a minute," and they always did anyway. And I closed the door, and I just knelt down, and there on my knees, and I said, "Sir, I think I have to change my attitude." And, of course, nothing happened. It never does, right? But, you know, the next morning I got up, and it wasn't as bad. And the next day after that, you know, and I started thinking of original ideas to do in the class. You know, and within a month, teaching was fun again, and it was really wonderful how those kids changed. You know, they were great kids in a month or so. And that's the whole story of my life in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, what I'm willing to give up and what I'm willing to change. You know, I have alternatives to anything in my life today. But boy, I didn't know that in the front seat of the car that day when I'm lying there sobbing and sniveling. Now, I've already been to AA, and it doesn't work. You know, I went to AA the first time in 1965, for God's sakes. I had a surf shop. My buddy and I had a surf shop down on the beach there in Oceanside, right at the end of the Strand. I don't know if you guys ever get down that far. A guy gave us this building, two surfers. I'm still a surfer. Look, all the kids down there love me. They think I'm wonderful. Help Mr. Roach back on his board. I had a five-way heart bypass 2 years ago. I'm still out there. I just love surfing. I just love it. Anyway, we wanted to get this surfboard shop on the beach, this other teacher and I, Woody, and then we would rent surfboards and fix surfboards and give surf lessons and make $1 million and never have to teach again. And we did really well. It's amazing. You know, a guy donated us this little building right on the water. Can you imagine? For two drunks. The building was we fixed it up, put windows in, painted it, and we got a refrigerator. A couple months later, we got some surfboards. No big hurry there. We had these two chaise lounge chairs, and we became sunset connoisseurs. We used to measure sunsets by martinis. I said, about an 8 tonight, Woody. Some guys come down in the evening and say, "I'd like to rent a surfboard." "Screw off, Charlie. We're watching a sunset now." You know, real tycoons. Best one we ever had was a 15 martini sunset. Oh, it was glorious. It was glorious. The sun and Woody and I went right together. They found us in the morning with sunburned mouths. Remember that? Remember that? I think that ought to be on the 20 questions. Ever had a sunburned mouth? No, get out of here. Heard a guy in Texas a couple of months ago. He had one for the 20 questions. That said, have you ever been run over by your own car while you were driving? I thought that was a good one, too. And as I said, we did amazingly well with the surfboard shop, but it was in the February of 1965. I went down to the shop. Of course, it was freezing cold. There wasn't any business or anything. In about a half an hour, I'm just going to disappear and be talking from the darkness. That's going to be on. I'll see you, though, so that's all that really matters. And you can't hit me either. So, but anyway, as I was saying, I went down this afternoon to pick up the surfboard. Some guy had hired us to repair it. And it was a sunny morning, and I had kind of a hangover. Of course. But I was not a morning drinker in 1965. I never had a morning drink as far as I can remember. You know, you remember the more as the years go by. But I was a weekend drinker, I think. That's where you don't drink Wednesday. A few drinks on the weekend is all I have. But that morning I was kind of hungover and I was working and I opened the refrigerator to see if there was a Coke or something in there. And my pal had been there the night before, Woody, and he'd left about this much, you know, a half pint of vodka. Just about a drink. A light drink is about what, and there was some orange juice in the refrigerator and I thought, hey, a screwdriver would be tasty. So I mixed it up and drank it. There was only enough for the one. And so I'm standing away on that surfboard and about 20 minutes later, you know, my head talked to me. My head still talks to me today, doesn't yours? But I don't listen. I have met the enemy. He lives here. All of them. I envy schizophrenics, don't you? There's only two of them in there. Hell, I could handle that easy. You know? Especially if they were compatible. Anyway, one of them said that morning, one of my head voices said, what a filthy trick. A shame on you. You finished Woody's booze off like that? Why don't you go up to the liquor store and get him a pint? You know, just a nice guy. And that afternoon, I got old Woody a fit. And I ended up just drunk. You know, really drunk. Remember that when you would say you were drunk? I remember I carried this little yellow old thing. It's called Sunny Fellowway. We live in L.A., and a guy had been arrested for riding a bicycle the wrong way on the Santa Ana Freeway. And somehow they saved his life. A highway patrol got him, and they dragged him over to the side. They said, what the hell are you doing riding a bicycle on a freeway? And the guy said, what bicycle? And I carried that in my wallet. Whenever she'd get on there, I said, now that's drunk. Look at that. Leave that. That's drunk. I'm drunk when I have to crawl. Now that's drunk. Okay. Or if you're arrested, that's drunk. Okay. Otherwise, you're tight. So you had a bun on. Or I had a couple. But I was drunk that day. I could tell. Because I couldn't walk. And I crawled home. And I told pre-Al-Anon, I said, I got to do something about my drinking. I'm getting drunk when I don't even mean to. And she had cut a little thing out of the paper that AA put in there about if you want to drink, it's your business. And I don't know why she thought to do that. And I called AA, and a guy named Stan came and got in. Stan's still sober today. His wife just died. And I helped, arrange a funeral for Daddy. He's got, oh, God, 40-some years now. But he's one of those quiet guys, you know, that just carries AA on his back and nobody, you know, not noisy at all, like grass. A quiet, nice AA. Doesn't make speakers make fools of themselves. With their cooperation, of course. But Stan took me to meetings and in 1965, and I realized I'd made a big mistake. They were morons in AA, it seemed to me. Now, remember, I'm highly educated. I'm educated way beyond my intelligence. And it seemed to me they had the IQ of an orange in these AA meetings. You know, they sit around with a bare light bulb, and I remember one of them about the third day said, we keep it simple here.
I bet you do.
No doubt you do. Yeah, mm-hmm. Got a sign on the wall that says, first things first.
Oh, good, good.
I always do third things first, don't you? Then right next to it, they had the one that really clinched it. It said, think. Oh, yeah, sure. Give me a gun in the closet and I'll sit and think. So, I don't know. They were... And they didn't know that I was sensitive. And that's my problem, really. I'm just too sensitive. I one time had to have that surgically removed. And I would want... You don't have anybody up here, newcomers, that whine and snivel, do you? I wouldn't think so. Not in Farmersville. But I used to whine and snivel, believe it or not. And about 10 minutes of my whining and sniveling, and somebody in the meeting would say, hey, you're whining and sniveling. Well, they didn't know I was sensitive, you know, and they hurt my feelings, so I would punish that meeting. I would not go back there again. And after a relatively short period of time, I ran out of meetings to punish. You know, there weren't that many in those days, but they had a little speaker meeting there in Oceanside on Sunday night, 6:30. Ideal for a loser like me, because I'm a loser's loser. I'm a classic loser. I would wait out in the car for the meeting to start, speaker meeting. That way you don't have to get involved, right? And I didn't want to go in and mingle with them, so I would wait in the car, and when the meeting started, I would skulk in that back door, you know, get that loser chair by the door. Yeah, check. You know, one where you keep one foot outside. Mm-hmm. And then I would fold my arms and judge the speakers. You can imagine how much I learned, huh? Sounded to me like everybody's name was Clem. And he'd been out of bib overalls about an hour and a half, and the wife's name was Martha. And they had been good, decent, happy, worthwhile folk their whole lives, said Clem and Martha. But they had drunk too much. And after they drank too much for a few years, it really started interfering with their lives. So they'd come here to the A&A, and they'd put the plug, and they had returned to being good, decent, happy, worthwhile folk again. Hot dog. Sounded to me like they had been rehabilitated. My hero in 1965 was a guy named Eldridge Cleaver. He was a black militant terrorist. That's my politics in 1965. Blow it up or burn it down. I didn't give a shit. You know. And, I was for peace. And if you were for peace, I'd kill you. And I'd gone down to San Diego a couple of months before and heard old Eldridge did this speech. Oh, he was a great speaker. They'd have loved him in AA today. He could use that four-letter verb. He could use it as an adjective, an adverb, a participle. You put mother with it, there was no end to what the guy said. He would fit in AA beautifully today, wouldn't he? Old Eldridge said, you know, he'd been in all, the speech I heard him give, he'd been in all the prison systems in California. And he was saying, in California prison system was always trying to rehabilitate him. He says, you know what they never knew? He had never been rehabilitated. See, you can't rehabilitate somebody who has never been rehabilitated. That's how I felt in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know about anybody here, this is my story, it's the only one I got. I never felt like Clem and Martha. They at some point in their life had been okay. I had never been okay. I was nuts when I was 4 years old. When I was 4 years old, we lived in Venice, California. I used to stand there in my little short pants. Oh, I had this beautiful hair. You should have seen it. And I'd stand there in my little tricycle and wait for a car to come. When a car would come, I'd go. I was like a soldier in post. I'd wait another half an hour for another one. Spent the day there. The people come along and say, oh, look at the little bit. What the hell? I didn't know how to do this yet. I just did the best I could with what I had. That's how I felt my whole life. I lived on the edge of insanity. Now, I served in the service. I spent most of my time in the brig. I graduated from college. I was a relatively successful person. You can be a school teacher and be successful at the same time. That's right. That's an oxymoron there. It's like, I got this new bunch of alcoholics. They call them rational alcoholics. There's an oxymoron if I ever heard one, huh? Show me one of those, huh? Anyway, I just was crazy all my life. And as I told you, the only relief I ever got in my life was that 8 minutes. You know, if you would have stopped me on the street and said, "What serenity?" I would have said, "Well, 8 minutes, 40 minutes into my drinking. That's the only peace of mind I ever had in my whole life." And they wanted me to give that up to hang around with Clem and Martha.
So long, you long, I'm gone, boy. Yeah, and then so for the next 5 years, I would come back to AA to get the heat on. There's probably no other phonies like me here tonight. But, you know, when they really had me against the wall, I would go to the ANA for a couple of weeks. Or one time I came in the afternoon about 4 o'clock, and these guys trolled up me all afternoon. And I got the message so wonderfully, I just levitated out of the building and went over to my buddy Big John and pounded on the door, and John came to the door. I said, "John, we're alcoholics and we have to go to AA." John says, "Oh, okay." He dragged us 3 weeks too long, poor John. But I took him by the hand and led him to the meeting that night and became his sponsor. And the next day, we both got drunk. A couple months later, Big John got arrested. Some minor thing. He was wiped through the window or something like that. And you know how they always arrest you? All you have is pants on, no shirt or shoes or anything. They took him to jail. So I got some clothes for him, went down, got him out of the jail down in San Diego that morning. You know, somebody had thrown up on his chest. And got him all cleaned up and dressed up. And we're driving back, going up this, back up the Oceanside. And I'm on the old road there, coming down right by Torrey Pines Golf Course there. And I'm giving him the greatest 12-step talk I ever heard. I wish I had it tonight. You know what I mean? I told him it's a disease and blah, 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 blah. And God, he got tears in his eyes. He was so grateful, Big John was. He leaned over and patted me on the neck. He said, "Boy, it's good to have a friend like you, because somebody who really cares." I said, "It's all right, John." He says, "Why don't you pull in George here? We'll have a drink." I said, "Okay." And we were both drunk that afternoon. Insanity. I have no trouble with the second step whatsoever. And I don't know, there's probably more people like me tonight than there are like my sponsor. My little sponsor who died 2 years ago was a wino. He was a Skid Row wino. He when he drank, that's all he did. I mean, he could not work. He could not function. And 34 years ago, he crawled out from under the steps of the Seaside Hotel. That's where he lived. Under the steps of the Seaside Hotel. And he had a rope for a belt, and one shirt that he'd had on for years, and a dirty pair of pants, and sandals for shoes. And he crawled out from under those steps and got sober. And I believe God got him sober just so that pompous jerks like me could find somebody to get him an AA. And he was a goer and a doer, but he was not a functioning alcoholic. He was a functioning alcoholic. Remember how I said, "Well, he died." We had just a memorial meeting for him, and you know, something like 600 people came. And you hear music? Okay. Woo! What music? And I remember I led the meeting for my little sponsor, and I said, "How many people here love Bill?" And more, 600 hands went up there. I said, "How many people had a resentment against Bill?" 600 hands went up. Yeah, he didn't have resentment. He was a carrier. But you know, I thank God every day of my life that little man was my sponsor, because you know, when you come out from under a bridge or you come out from under the steps of a hotel, and
life's pretty simple. And this program of Alcoholics Anonymous is in the first 164 pages of this book. And you live your life by that 164 pages. And you don't need psychology, and you don't need psychiatry, and you don't need anything else. You only have to follow the precepts, and it's a spiritual way of life. And that's the way I learned it, and thank God for that. There are fewer and fewer and fewer people coming in this program from under bridges. And so those of us who are still alive who are sponsored by those guys, we're going to have to remember it and keep this thing the way they handed it to us. I worked real hard in service all my life in Alcoholics Anonymous because I wanted this thing to be here for my kids if they needed it. And two of my kids are sober in Alcoholics Anonymous today. Both of them have 4 years. And this program was here for my kids the way it was given to me. And my kids follow this program as is outlined in the pages of this book. So that if their kids need it, you know, because, you know, the scientists the last few years, only 2 years ago, they proved that all their wisdom and after all their experimentation and knowledge, alcoholism is heredity. No shit! My father and mother would be glad to know that, you know. And my uncles and aunts and grandfather and my kids. Oh, medical science, is there any end to the wonder of it? But I'm the kind of drunk that goes to work every day. Probably a lot more people in this room. Most people die of alcoholism are people who went to work until their liver went, right? And so my dad told me, if you eat breakfast and go to work, you're not an alcoholic. Made sense to me. He never said a word about puking breakfast back up, you know. Off I went every day, you know. I'm a functioning alcoholic. You know, I got to do 10 times more than you to prove I'm half as good. Anybody identify with that? I'm a goer and a doer. And I said, as a teacher, you'd leave your class, I'd take your class too. Functioning alcoholic. One guy said a functioning alcoholic is one whose wife works. I like that now that I'm retired. But I went to work every day, and I do the job. Boy, I do the job. Story I always tell because my sponsor told me that I have to tell the story anytime I talk. And the principal called me in one day, which he was wont to do, and he had gotten a flyer in the mail about a debate and a speech tournament which was going to be held at San Diego State College, which was 26 miles down the road. And since I was teaching speech, among other things, he said, John, would you get me a cup of coffee too, please, John? Good, good. I'm good. I like to keep these young guys around for that kind of stuff. He let me kiss his ring earlier. So now I don't have to die. Anyway, the principal said, hey, this debate stuff looks like it would be really good for your students. Why don't you try it? And I didn't know anything about it, so I got a book and read a little bit and took an hour and a half and taught them what I knew. And I took these 6-8 kids. We went to this debate and speech tournament down at San Diego State College, 26 miles down the road. We were amazed when we got there. They were huge. There was like 50 schools participating, like 500 contestants. You know, really a big deal. All the boys had three-piece suits, neckties. We're Levi's. What the hell we know? And I don't need to tell you, we got killed. I mean, we did not win a round. They slaughtered us. I don't like to lose. I know what kind of drunk you are, but I don't like to lose. And I'm getting steamed anyway, and I go in the coach's room. There's about 25 of them in there, and they're all pals. And I'm the only stranger there, and they snubbed me, it seemed to me. So I hung around all day so they could snub me longer. You know how we are. One guy there really bothered me. He had a lot of hair. That bothered me right away. One of those gray manes. You know, not a hair out of place. Four barbers probably to get it done just right. Had about a $700 suit on. Other coaches did this when they went in front of him, you know. This jerk about 2 in the afternoon turns to me and says, where are you from? God, I was grateful to be spoken to. I said, Oceanside. He said, oh, where's that? 26 miles up the... I don't forget that guy for the next 4 or 5 years.
Thank you, Donna.
And I went back to the high school, and I built a speech team. I built the speech team. I built a juggernaut speech team. We used to come out of that bus like a clown car. I mean, I superhuman effort. I mean, I was there till 9:30, 10 o'clock every night, yelling and screaming. Two kids at a time, you know, right up, spit in their face. Some reporter asked a student of mine one time, "What's the secret of your coach's success?" The kid said, "Terror." He wasn't joking, boy. Do you have any idea how hard that is to make 50 people do what they don't want to do? I mean, that'll wind you up, baby. That makes you tense. Makes the nerves hang out the ends of your fingers about this far, and your brain gets too big for your head. But out in the glove compartment of the car waiting for me at the end of the day was a half a pint of vodka. Getting hot in the glove compartment. You know, whatever Swifty had in the basket that week, there it was, you know. And it would just call to me all day, "Go get him, Cliff, baby. I'm waiting, darling." I'd finish with that last kid in the evening, and I'd get in that car, and I'd open up that hot vodka, and I'd light big cigars I smoked in those days, and I just took half of it. Oh, guys, anything in the world like hot vodka just goes down everything. And the nerves back up in the thing. If you took every psychiatrist on earth end to end, they could not do me one jillionth the good of a half a pint of hot vodka. And I'd puff on that cigar. Damn, you're a good coach. Finish that vodka and get rid of the bottle and sit there in the darkness of that car and puff on that cigar. Have that 8 minutes. Where everything is okay. My island of serenity. And then just before I reach over to turn the ignition to start home, I think about that gray-haired sucker down in San Diego. Oh, it gave him a few minutes. Then I went home and went crazy, and that's what happened to that family, okay? I told you about that family. But I built that speech team, and in a couple years, we won one of those speech tournaments. But I didn't say anything to the gray-haired guy. It wasn't time yet. We know it's time. The next year, there were like 12 or 13 tournaments. My team took first place in every tournament. I mean, 30, 40, 50 schools in a tournament took first place in every tournament. But I can wait. I think revenge is better than Christmas, don't you? The next year there was a tournament, there were 25 schools competing in the tournament. My team scored more sweepstakes points than the other 24 schools combined. Then I went up to the gray-haired guy and I put my nose right against his and I said, "Do you know where Oceanside is now?" And he just looked blank. He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Don't you remember about 4 or 5 years ago, you said to me, Oceanside, where's that?" And he said, "We just moved here from Nebraska. I didn't know where it was." You guys drank like I did, didn't you? Hey. That's the story of my life, right there. This guy's in San Diego for 4 years every night. I'm up in Oceanside. I'm just here, you drink. He didn't know it. He had no idea. And that's what my anger does for me today. When I allow it to come back, that's my number one defect of character, anger, self-obsessed anger. A couple of years ago, I was on the freeway there in L.A. My Al-Anon was with me. Some guy comes over 9 lanes to cut me off. 9 lanes, and I said, "You see him? He came from all the way." And she said, "They all get up this morning and said, let's go on the freeway and get pissed." So I guess I'm not really that different, you know. But right after that, my wife and I had that, and I ended up down at the lagoon, and then I moved in down at the beach with my buddy, and I stayed there for a while, you know, and I'd said for years if I could get rid of them, I'd be okay. And I'd gotten rid of them, and I was drunk all the time. I was missing work, which I'd never done. And my life just felt like it was slipping between my fingers. It was getting away, and I went by the house one afternoon to harangue my wife about money, I think it was, and some of the kids were home, and the Hershey salesman was kind of bobbing in the background there. He's examining his shoes a lot, man. And I did something, as I look back on it, was really stupid. I said to Dave, "Dave, what's it like not to have your old man around the house?" And old Dave looked me right in the eye, and he said, "It's beautiful." And he didn't know how sensitive to him. And God, I went back to that dump on the beach, and I ranted and raved and screamed and hollered and sniveled and whined. But I did not take a drink that afternoon. And I went out and sat on the screen porch, and I watched the ocean. And I didn't know it, but that was my bottom. You know, a 16-year-old kid looked me in the eye and said it was great not to have me around. And that was my bottom. Kind of a loony bottom, I know, but what are you going to do? There's enough for me, for God's sake, you know. Of course, if you're on death row or something, I guess it doesn't sound like much. I sponsored this one guy, ran over a nun with his motorcycle, you know. He went back in the bar and said, "How big's a penguin?" Grass told me that. But that was my bomb, and I sat there and watched that sunset that evening, and it was so beautiful. It was the most beautiful sunset I ever saw. And about the time that the sun was going down into the water, I had that moment of clarity our big book talks about. I just saw me, and I saw what I had become. And I didn't like it. And so I went to the bedroom and dug through this sea bag where I kept stuff I didn't use, and I dug out this book. And I'd read it once in my travels through the program, and being an English teacher, I thought it was clearly written. We read a lot better this time. And I read this book for 3 days and 3 nights. I did call in sick. I didn't go to work. I ate a little bit. I slept some. And I read the book. I read it night and day. I read it cover to cover. I read all the stories. And in that edition, there was a story called The Professor and the Paradox. He was another egotistical school teacher. And he rang my bell. And on the third time through the book, on the 13th of January, 1970, I was on page 63 again. And on page 63, there's a little prayer, if you knew, and that prayer is step 3. And in my befuddled condition, it just seemed like it would be a good idea if I would kneel down and read that prayer out loud to myself. And that's what I did. I read, "God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self." And I had a spiritual awakening that morning. I had an experience. It was just a quiet knowledge that I was going to be all right, that I was not in charge of my life anymore. And I have not had a drink or anything, any chemicals to alter my brain since that morning, the 13th of January, 1970. And I seem to be applauding that power, because that power is why we're all here, huh? I don't know a heck of a lot about God. And I don't even call him God unless I'm with you. I call him my higher power in my prayer and meditation. Because I don't know anything about him, but I understand him, her, whatever. I find a higher power that runs the universe in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think that's the way that higher power designed this program for people like me. I think the higher power will come to anybody on the face of the earth, anybody who wants to know again. But I think he helped Bill Wilson and his early pioneers so that there was a way to learn to live for people like me who could not do it any other way. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous because that's where I see the higher power. You know, I'm sitting around with a whole bunch of us talking around tonight, you know, and I'm looking in the eyes, huh? Is there anything more beautiful than sober eyes? I like to do 12-step work. I go get them, baby. Sometimes when I'm down, I just go with the central office and I sit down and said, I get the next one. Whoever, I don't give a damn if he lives in Poway. I go. You know, he throws up on my shoes and I feel a lot better. But I go get the guy, you know, I love to go to a dirty, filthy place, you know, go in the room, and there's this dirty, filthy guy there. What I do, the first thing I do is I get right down and look in his eye. Newcomer eyes, huh? You want to see the absence of power? You want to see lack of hope? You want to see emptiness? Newcomer eyes. That's what my eyes look like when I was 4 years old. Lack of power was my dilemma. And get the guy cleaned up, take him to a meeting, go to a coffee shop after the meeting, sit across the table from him. A lot of times, the power's in his eyes. That night, I've seen it happen lots and lots and lots. That night, the power's in his eyes. And I sponsor guys that are sober 20 years and 19 and 18 and 7 and 6 and 5, you know, you name it. And I got to watch the light come on in their eyes. And I got to watch the light change. And watch them get happy, you know, go to barbecues and laugh their butts off, you know, hug and kiss and have a, and see them get married and have children and become citizens. That's where I see God. I don't know about you, but I see God every day of my life. And I see God in your eyes. I never saw a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous where I did not see God in their eyes. And the working members of Al-Anon, too. I was teasing Al-Anon earlier. And I can teach you because I love you. My Al-Anon is a greatest example of the program as I am a bigger example. She's a fantastic, unbelievable human being through the program of Al-Anon. We don't call it the program in our house. We don't distinguish. If only 12 steps, they don't know who's working them. They don't care. They'll work for anybody who's desperate enough to work them. And she was desperate. And, you know, we both sponsor a lot of people, so we help them. You know, if she's not home, I help them. You know, sick Al-Anon, they're fun. Oh, listen, man, they obey orders. They're all, you get an Al-Anon direction, away they go, boy. Hey, I like that. You know? I'm not like those pukes I sponsor. You know?
I don't know why I have to do that.
So you won't die, Jerko. And man, those guys I sponsor, they hope she isn't there. She comes and they got it whining. She knows how to take care of whiners, too. We have a big sign in our house, a big stop sign, you know, no whining. But, we, you know, we share this way of life. And so we've been married now 42 years plus, huh? That's long enough. You know, and our kids got grown up, Al-Anon went back to college, she's older than all the teachers. She got a degree, she got a master's degree, she's now a family therapist, you know, and she's very, very extremely successful in treating alcoholic women who are molested as children, which there are lots of them. You know, she, in her own way, she does a lot, and sponsors half the known Al-Anon world, and you know, we leave each other alone. We get along fine. But I want to tell you a little bit about my little sponsor when I knocked on his door that night. That very night, 13th of January, 1970, and Margie, Bill's wife, opened the door. And I told you, I was a five-year loser. An obnoxious, arrogant loser. I have never seen anybody so glad to see me in my life. Margie saw me. She just came and blew. She said, oh, come in. Smacked us in the house. Pours me the first of 8 trillion cups of coffee. She said, this is wonderful. She said, Bill's been crazy lately. He's had nobody to work with. This is so nice. And old Bill comes home about 10 minutes later and says, Cliff, oh, boy. In about a half an hour, I'm thinking, anything else I can do to help you folks out? I'll be glad to help any way I can. But, you know, they knew the great secret of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can't keep it unless you give it away. I can't keep it unless I give it away. You can't keep it unless you give it away. Nobody ever stayed sober sitting on this program. We're all evangelists, or else we die. And that little man taught me that, because that was the last nice thing he said to me for about 5 years. I think the nicest thing he said in the next 5 years was, shut up. He was terribly cruel to me, and I hope if you're new, if you're anything like him, I hope you find a little mean rhino like that. I mean, he was so cruel to me, I told him, I have degrees, you know. He said, so does the thermometer, you know, where they stick back sometimes. And he took me everywhere in AA. He hauled me all over Southern California. He took me to meetings like this. He took me to places where people are laughing and kissing and hugging and bringing each other, because I can't live without that. I can't live without it. And so he took me, you know, and he took me to Great Tunnel meetings too, so I'd know what they were like. You know what a Great Tunnel meeting is, isn't it? That's where these six guys sit around the bare light bulb and stay sober. And sobriety's like this long gray tunnel, and you just crush. Every year a trap door opens and a cake comes down. Imagine somebody like Graff walking into that meeting. I don't know who to be tougher on. But I found out that Alcoholics Anonymous is a great, big, huge, magnificent fellowship that's filled with wonderful people. And I've been having a good time ever since. You know, and the fact that I come up here and do my little talk ensures me that I won't have to drink today. But I want you to know that I share my life with a lot of people. I mean, in the Oceanside Carlsbad area, I sponsor a lot of guys. And I have a good sponsor who lives up in Laguna Beach, Funny Talking Swede, named Johnny A, who kisses me. I hate that. But he's a great sponsor, you know, and I have so many friends. I've seen hundreds and hundreds of people come in these rooms, and the light come on their eyes, and I share their life with them, and then I share my life with them, and they with me. That's what makes me happy, joyous, and free. That's what makes me happy, joyous, and free, is the sharing of our loved one with another. Giving a damn about you, and you give a damn about me. Oh, Peggy M. in Nebraska, a couple of years ago, I was somewhere with her, and she said something, knocked me off my chair. She said, alcoholism is the only prison where the locks are on the inside. And I went, whoa. Because that's the story of my life. I locked myself in here. I built a prison before I was 4 years old. And I don't know why, and I don't care why. I'm not looking for a psychological answer. I've been provided a spiritual way out. There are 12 keys that I can take and unlock myself and let me out. And my sponsor said, because I was a brilliant intellectual, they numbered them for me. 1, 2, 3. And I'm out. And I share my life with so many people. See, now, when... You know, it's 6 months from now, some night, when I'm thinking, is this all there is? This it? I'll remember tonight. And I'll remember this scene. I'll remember your faces. I'll remember your eye. And sometime when you're feeling kind of down, you'll remember the laughter we had a little while ago, won't you? Because that's what gets us, that's what saves our butts is the laughter. You know, you ever go to a convention, you're sitting right in the middle of the room and some goofs up there talking, you know, and we're all rolling together. I don't do anything like that. That's when God talks to me. God taps me on the shoulder and talks to me when we're just laughing together, when we're just roaring with laughter. Because the laughter is what fuels us. I'd love to take a new Al-Anon to AA meetings, don't you? Speaker meetings. You know, the guys up there, I fell on the Christmas tree and crushed all the presents. And this Al-Anon. Nothing funny about that. Just keep taking them, you know. Finding one night. And we got them. You know, you've seen newcomers, you watch them, and when that laughter starts in their eyes, that laughter starts in their head, we got them. They're never going to have a good time drinking again as long as they live, right? The great Jewish philosopher said, there are only two emotions in the world. There's love and there's fear. That's all. There's only two. And then he said, they are mutually incompatible. From the age of 4 on, I lived with a big black ball in the middle of my body. and it was called fear, and it ruled everything I ever said and everything I ever did. Some days it was like a softball, other days it was a bowling ball. And it ruled my life. And that black ball was fear. I didn't know to name it then. And when I got sober and I had to live in the real world without any sedation, I thought, what the hell am I going to do about the ball? Because I can't even sedate it anymore. And so my sponsor made me go help people that I hated. He made me stand at the door and shake hands. What's your name? Like, I really get it. Then he made me go on 12-step calls. And he made me, you know, call this jerk Al around, who is a bigger jerk than me. Just went to Al's wedding here a couple of weeks ago. Was his best man. He's sober 20 years. But I hated him. But I had taken the meeting. You know, and the magic happened when Al got drunk one more time. And I went over to his house, and he was falling apart, and he was crying. And I was telling him, but you're going to be all right. You know the things you tell a guy who's had a slip, one day at a time, blah. And all of a sudden, out of my mouth, I said, I love you, Al. And I realized I did. And I learned to love newcomers before I could learn to love my own children. But the fact of the remains, I did do that. Now, as I told you, two of my kids are sober now, of course, not. And I mean, they're growing, doing members. Two of the girls went wrong, they joined Al-Anon. The IC salesman, a very successful man, lives on the island of Maui in the Hawaiian Islands on the beach. I'm going to go there in May and sponge off people. But I was in the islands last spring, and he came over and spent the day with me. And I'll bet you 50 times that day he put his hand on me or his arm around me and said, I love you, Dad. That's a guy who said it was great not to have me around. You know, he's one of the best friends I have in the world today. He was an agriculture major in college. I don't ask him what he grows. That's none of my business. None of my business. This is the easier, softer way, isn't it? This is the easier, softer way. In my work all the time, I used to have to read these sociologists. I love them. They're goofier than us. Their favorite word is alienation. They say that's what's wrong with Western civilization. We're alienated from each other. What they're trying to say is that they don't think there's any sense of community left in Western civilization. There's no place where a person belongs. Every time I read one of those clowns, I think, why don't you drink a little more? You drink as much as I drink, you'll find a place where you fit where you belong. You know, I'm a little fat school teacher from Oceanside. I'm the middle of the goddamn nowhere out here. Farmer's Mill, for God's sake. With a bunch of people that love me and whom I love, and I belong in this meeting. And it doesn't matter whether you think I do or not. I belong here. I belong to you, and you belong to me. Because we paid a hell of an initiation fee to get in this club, didn't we? In money and in pain. And I don't know if my nonsense did anybody any good. I come up here to save anybody. I come up to save certain portions of my anatomy. I don't know if there's anybody in this room that needs me except Graf. He needs something desperately. But I want to tell you one thing for sure. I sure as hell need you.